Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast. Pope and Young Club's been liking our stuff lately. Have you noticed that?
I think it's because old Bill or whatever his name is.
Whatever his name is.
His name's not Bill.
I'm just a Bill up on Pope and Young Hill.
What's happening, y'all? We are sitting in an RV. We started out podcasting in an RV, if
How
you remember
that. How about that? Yep. I used to cook elk steaks and we'd podcast.
We started filming in 2016 together, and you shot an elk that year.
Mm-hmm.
We did a podcast after you shot the elk.
Mm-hmm.
That never aired. And at this point, I don't know if we had that file anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know where that's at.
I don't know if
that one that I did when I was on the road?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, the audio from that was pretty bad.
We decided we were going to do some practice podcasts. Well, we decided we were going to do some podcasts, and they ended up being practice podcasts because they were so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But we're back in an RV. We're not cooking elk steaks. We didn't kill an elk last year, but we've been talking a little bit about maybe trying to kill an elk this year.
We just might do it. We just might not.
We got to put in and try to draw something, and that's the
I'll tell you one thing that doesn't work, after my personal experience, is self-filming a elk hunt. You're going to self-film some hiking, and then you're going to self-film some elk butchering. That's how it's going to go.
Yeah.
But one thing you can self-film, and one thing that a guy does really well, his name's Chris B, he self-films really well. And not only does he self-film, but he self-kills a lot of big deer.
Self-kills.
He does, dude. We have him on the podcast today. Chris has become a bro for sure. We're talking about a lot of stuff off air that was
He's a dear friend.
I wish. Yeah, that's right. I wish we could let y'all in on that, but it ain't happening. So sorry.
Yeah.
But, we did a lot of self-filming this year ourselves. Tyler and I filmed a lot more than we thought we would self-filming, both killed some pretty big deer self-filming. Yep. I killed a Kansas buck self-filming. You killed a Texas public buck self-filming. Kansas public.
I was going for shock factor most this year, and so I was making people think that I was going to kill it on film, and then the last second making sure it wasn't in the frame.
Elbowing and stuff like that.
I like to elbow the camera. Gosh, man. So y'all haven't seen that one yet. I self-filmed killing the Kansas buck,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, but I elbowed the camera.
That's what happens when you wear a gorilla suit in the tree.
You don't even feel it, dude. I had no clue. I had to watch it later on before
but
I knew what
happened.
But there's
some sick footage from that. I'm excited for that to come out. It'll be a little while, I think, actually, but that's going to be good.
I actually had the deer at 5 yards in the frame, so like it wasn't that I didn't get good footage of him or nothing.
Let me tell you something. Anytime a deer is closer than 15 yards, it's when it goes from cool to bad, really, honestly. Like, you're just like, please go away. You know,
you're not sure if, anything is going on at all. Mm. Like, you have no clue. That, like, how tight your booty hole is.
The wrong lip smack's going to run him off, you know? So you're just
and
like...
It was quiet that day, man.
I know.
Yeah, there. That it's actually a cool video. I had the whole thing put together, but it'll probably be a little while before we release it, considering our friend Mr. Michael Presswood said that nobody cares about deer hunting right now, and so we're gonna go ahead and say you're probably right, man. We've been releasing some video stuff and all that. Make sure if you're listening and you haven't heard of us before, you subscribe to the podcast and you subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's a way to see and hear more from us.
All the YouTube stuff will be linked down below in the descriptions. You can go check out those hunts we were talking about, some big deer hit the ground. So it's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. I actually got my mount back from Illinois buck.
Giant.
I've forgotten. It's crazy, man. Like, I think some people had either forgotten or just didn't quite realize or whatever, but that buck is huge.
I mean, there wasn't a ton of footage of the deer.
It was kind of a little bit of a speck in the corner before he ran to a spot where he was out of the frame and got shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not self-film. No. So I'm not going to take the blame for that one.
Yeah.
I've taken the blame for a lot of them right now. But that one wasn't my fault on the filming side. But it's okay.
Inadvertently, it was.
That's true.
No, it wasn't too bad. Either way, big deer died, and that was cool. So, yeah. And I still haven't seen the mount yet, which I'm kind of sad about. You teased me saying you might put it in my house, and then it didn't happen.
I would have, but I laid it in my parents' house, and they have a dog, and I was like, oh, I'm definitely not going to keep this thing on the floor in here. So I moved it out to my dad's little hunting room, where One-Eyed Jack is sitting. This Illinois buck is.
Really?
Yeah. What makes me sick is that One-Eyed Jack has never been in my house, and I killed that deer in 2015. If that tells you something, it tells you that I have not had a house in a freaking long time.
A long time.
So, I'm sad about that, but I got one.
We're building a white-tail crib right here.
It's a white-tail crib that we're going to have hopefully finished up sometime in the hopefully early summer.
Yeah.
I start thinking about the things I have left to do, and like I don't have a ton of things left to do, really. It's just tedious to get them done in the right
order.
That's
the thing, is tying up all the loose ends is what takes long.
Yep.
It's like, you know, I've built some houses. You're self-contracting this thing. It's like, golly, just lining people up is, you know, once you get the – you feel like once you get it in the dry, you're like halfway done. It's like, no, you're a sixth of the way done when it comes to actual time.
What stinks is like – I'll like contact somebody. I'm like, yeah, go ahead and put me on the schedule. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, you hadn't heard from them. And like, I would almost guarantee you they forgot to put you on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hit them up and they're like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh, well, the weather's been bad. So I'm behind. Probably can get to you in like 10 days, maybe 2 weeks, something like that. Let's shoot for this day. And then it's like another 4 days after that usually. And so it ends up being like 5 weeks before somebody gets to you. You're like, bro, my dad says it, but like, a lot of these guys, they're not businessmen.
Mm-mm.
They are tradesmen.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's so, right.
But anyway, it's...
At least our taxidermist is prompt when he...
He is.
Yeah.
He does a good job. He, you know, of course, I shot that deer before the wave of deer comes
in. That's right.
November.
If you shoot a deer in October, you get it pretty quick.
What happens if you shoot one in late November?
It sounds like the book gets thick real quick.
Yeah. I shot one in early November that ended up getting submitted with your deer because he went to the freezer in late November, and he's going to be...
That means we can both probably pick those up at the same time.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
We could do a selfie vid.
Yeah, we should document that, going and picking up both of those deer or whatever, and put it on YouTube or whatever. That'll be kind of fun. Taxidermist pickup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
TDP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should put that on the shirt.
Yeah.
Look at old TDP.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Anyway, the podcast today is all about self-filming. And so, like KC said, Chris does it well. I have done it well. On the other hand, in this year, I did not. But, you know, some years are better than others. And for me, I had a lot of big deer in my sights this year. And so it was hard for me to, you know, like, I've killed a lot of big deer, but but and that's not like a humble brag or anything. I'm just saying I'm making a point here that like I've hunted Kansas a long time. Mm-hmm. I've shot some big deer there. But on the place that I've shot a lot of those deer, there's been some monsters mm-hmm. that I haven't really even had a chance to hunt because I've been kind of the low man on the totem pole mm-hmm. on that place. And so like I kind of take whatever's left over. I usually have ended up in the past chasing a deer that's a big 135 inch 8 point or whatever that's old late in the season or whatever it might be. You know, like some old deer. I've shot some big.
Shot the oldest old deer ever, right?
Oldest buck ever.
Oldest buck
that's
ever.
The truth. That's mm-hmm. the truth. And so like I end up chasing those deer late in the season or whatever. And they're big. Like, you know, I've got a 6 point that might make Pope and Young. I mean, he's 22 inches wide.
He's freaking cool.
He's huge, you know, like, but, as far as like, you know, kind of world class or if you were to score or whatever, then I haven't shot just a ton of, you know, giant deer. And so I ended up, you know, shot the buck in Illinois, which was is definitely a top three buck for me, mm-hmm. maybe top two buck score wise. And then frame wise, top two buck for sure. Mm-hmm. And then,
is it your other big buck also an eight?
Yeah,
the other one of the top two you're talking about is also an 8 point.
Yeah. He's a 154 inch 8 point.
Yeah. Toad.
I'm ready to get them beside each other because
they're different frames.
They are. Yeah. They are. I want to see like, because that deer always, when I looked at them all together, that other 8 point was like, I was so impressed. Mm-hmm. Like I could not walk by them and go, like, that's probably the most impressive deer I have on the wall.
That's an archery buck or a rifle buck?
Rifle.
Yep. So you have two big rifle bucks too, right?
Or is there a 10 point? Just one.
So I thought there was a 10 point that was also a rifle. But you have another big 10 point too.
My other biggest deer I'd shot before this year, which it may still be, but like score wise, is he's a mainframe 10, but he's got split G2s on both sides that are identical. And that was a bow buck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he has a split brow, I think. So he's 13. But yeah. So like then the other buck that I shot this year here, you know, in Texas, well, shot two bucks in Texas, one on public that was, you know, one of my biggest bucks, you know, probably top five or something like that, top seven, that like, you know, for a public land buck in Texas is just ridiculous. So it's like, it's one of those deals. And then the buck that I shot, you know, here more closer to home is like probably my biggest buck ever or very close to it. And it's like, how do you just forego the chance to shoot that deer because you have to get him in frame? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just had some happenstance things go the other way and didn't get him in frame. But
dude, quite
honestly,
I got
a lot of cool pre-roll of most of them.
Like, and I twice this happened to me this year, but I would get to full draw, and then it's like you're pretty much where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And both times I try to knock the camera with a bow, you know, it just doesn't work very good.
Yeah.
You know, like, but that's kind of the thing is like. You know, you want to time it to where you're drawing when the deer's coming into the frame. That way he's center frame when you're shooting, but that's just not how real world works sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? And, Chris talks a lot about the details on this thing, but anyways, we probably should just let him tell us as opposed to us talking all about it.
He'll have all the good ideas.
Yeah. So, anyways, we'll get Chris on here. If you haven't, be sure and subscribe. We really, really appreciate that stuff. It helps us out a ton. So, let's see, or probably can't see since it's a podcast, but we're going to hear what Chris has to say about self-filming.
All right, so now on the phone is Chris B. Chris, we've been talking a little bit before we actually went live on this thing, and there's some cool stuff happening in your world right now, but you were on a laptop recently. Is the day-to-day life pretty boring and interior right now?
Yeah, I've been kind of expanding, I guess, lately. Done with hunting season, tournaments are starting
to
pop up.
Me
too. Yeah, I've eaten a lot of cookies in the last couple of months.
Tacos, man, expansion for sure.
yeah, right.
So what happens when you get all, cuffed up and happy, you know, you go to expanding.
In different ways. I guess I'm expanding in different ways.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha.
Business expansion. But Mitchell Need, he did quite a bit of my filming last year. He's actually working full time for me now.
Awesome, dude. I was waiting on that to happen.
So that will, I mean, it already has that we've been chugging away. He just started like a week ago. So, he's catching up on videos and I've been able to focus on some other stuff, and that'll be awesome going forward this next year to have someone kind of like right-hand man to work on stuff. And
absolutely.
That's super, super exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just trying to, you know, keep the growth going and try to, you know, dot my I's and cross my T's and keep going.
Yeah. I mean, where do you go from here? You know, I mean, you just released a, you know, giant buck film in her video. And I mean, do you still have quite a bit of videos coming out from the rest of the season, or what does that look like?
So the last part of the season wasn't super, super eventful. I ended up shooting one deer in December, I think. So I think we have two or three videos that Mitch has been working on. But yeah, not super exciting. We're kind of condensing it all down. I initially was envisioning like several episodes out of them, but we kind of just want to get them out there and get caught up and get moving on other stuff.
Sure.
So just a couple videos and then moving into like the off season stuff.
Yeah.
How many I'm super jacked about?
Yeah. How many deer did you shoot this year, or how many, I guess bucks did you shoot this year?
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Wow. It's pretty good.
6 or 7.
How many were self-film?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. 3.
It's cool, man.
Yep.
Man, you did a good job on the self-film stuff, and we definitely, that's kind of what we want to talk about in this episode a little bit. But you mentioned that this kind of spring season, and I guess the off season essentially for most hunters at least, is coming up and you're excited about it. What's so exciting about it?
Well, for me, I kind of never stop going full blast because tournaments pick up, and so the traveling never really stops. I actually was just down in Alabama this past weekend, did a 3D shoot, an ASA, and we got about one a month all throughout the summer. And then I kind of switch my content over to more like fun and informative educational stuff. Mm-hmm. And unboxings. We're going to be rolling out a bunch of Lancaster archery unboxings. In the coming months, we're going to try to shoot for like one or two a month.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's cool. It's just never ending. Hunting season, I mean, for the outdoor community, I feel like hunting season is such a priority, and then the rest of the season is kind of laid back. But for me, it's kind of, at least moving forward, hunting season's kind of be like 20-30% of content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's, you got a lot of stuff this time of year. Last year it was canceled, right? Because of all the coronavirus stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff this year was canceled.
They're about to cancel the element on YouTube if we keep putting out dead deer videos, you know?
They've been getting on you about that?
No. I've definitely seen some censorship here and there.
Got some shadow bans going.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mainly on Facebook.
Yeah. I don't think I've been affected by any of that. I don't know. I think since my content is super diversified and it's not 100% hunting, I kind of don't get too targeted by that. But
I need to. I need to become a professional archer, I guess.
You can. For sure do.
Yeah, I'm definitely the opposite of that, I feel like, at times.
There you go. Maybe just do some shooting in the backyard and film it. Yeah. Seems like that's, people love that stuff.
Yeah. I could just put like 300 yard shot in the title, and it doesn't matter like where the arrow actually goes, does it? Yeah.
Just aim in the air and then measure the distance. That's all I do.
We will beat Chris B.
That's a good clickbait.
I like it.
Yeah,
like
that's right, dude.
It's actually super easy.
Yeah,
it doesn't take much skill.
No, I mean, I can tell watching your videos. So. We need to have you on. We had you on a long time ago. Back when you're like 12 or 13, I think, we had you talking about how to shoot a bow and some of the thoughts behind that. But we need to get you on to revisit some of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, because like KC's a good shot, no doubt. I have no clue.
Targets. Yeah. You know,
still.
Yeah.
And when it
yeah.
comes to fur and, you know, live things, it's, you know, all bets are off. It's just, I'm sure that you can speak to that more than about near anybody just because you see a bunch of people. I mean, how many, really, in the professional world, how many guys are real crossovers where they, you know, are shooting or they hunt as much as they do target stuff?
It depends on what type of target stuff.
Yeah.
The 3D guys, dang near like 80% of them are pretty avid hunters.
Yeah.
And a lot of the top guys are hunters. If you go on the strictly like target stuff, more like indoor or world archery stuff, that number drops a lot.
Yeah.
Just because you're dealing with a lot of guys that just strictly shoot target. But yeah, for 3D, there's a good amount that crossover.
Is there anything in the target world that inhibits you in the woods? Like something you do or that you practice or that you feel like just like, cause a lot of people would say that that's something that's probably good for you overall. And I'm sure you'd say the same, but like, is there anything that you can think of that's like, man, I practice that all year long and then I get in the woods and it's helped me mess up a time or two or not shoot as good as I wanted to or something like that.
I don't think it's hindered me at all. If anything, like shooting competitions, it just makes me way more confident with a hunting bow, all around, you know, cause when you shoot tournament archery in competitions, you know, you're doing all sorts of stuff to your equipment and learning and shooting, and even just the volume of arrows that you practice helps when you switch over. It's tremendously made me a better bow hunter because I shoot tournaments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your favorite part of that whole season?
Tournament season?
Yeah.
I've made a lot of friends and relationships through archery. There's a big community around it, kind of different than hunting. When you go hunting, you really don't. But maybe besides like your tight knit group that you like go hunting with on the weekends. But when you go to these tournaments, like you see a lot of people and I've built some like really awesome friendships around it. Mm-hmm. So like, even though that's not 100% archery related, that's like a huge, huge plus side to me to stick with it.
Sure.
And then just the competition, like I'm a pretty competitive person. So that I just like to do that, you know, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that to get that drive and that feeling, a little bit of adrenaline pumping through the veins is always awesome. And then I just like shooting, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's not the only aspect I don't like of it is the constant travel, and unless you're winning, it's just a money sucker.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I can imagine it being like rodeo or bass fishing or any other stuff, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's no different.
So, we don't know a ton of guys in that world, but, we know old Rod White a little bit. Have you ever gone head to head against that guy?
Yeah. Rod, I was a couple targets down from him at this last ASA.
Yeah. Can you outshoot Rod? Can you beat him?
Rod's really good.
I knew you wouldn't give me a straight answer on that.
You can't give a straight answer on that because it's so day dependent or whatever. Like if we looked at the scores, I'm sure there's plenty of days where Rod shot a higher score than me. And there's plenty of days where vice versa.
Yeah.
I do know, I think he was a couple targets down for me after day one of the ASA. So I think I might've shot like 8 up and he might've shot like 6 up, but
good. I don't know.
I shot the same.
It's better than when you say those numbers. So that's good to me.
In that instance, I might've shot like 2 points better than Rod, but gotcha. If I had to guess, I think he shot way better day two than I did. No, yeah. Rod's a really good shot. And he went to the Olympics and everything.
Yeah.
Dude's a killer too, man. He kills some big deer too.
Oh yeah. He shoots giant deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helps to live in Iowa for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Everybody in Iowa does, I think. It's just crazy. If you live in Iowa and you deer hunt, you pretty much, I would consider that you know what you're doing.
Yeah. It's funny you brought that up. I just moved to Iowa.
Oh,
no way. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Dang, dude.
Dang, you know what you're doing.
Smart.
Yeah, yeah.
Smart. Hey, I figured after my Kansas buck, I can't go downhill.
Yeah, no, you could do that real easily in Michigan probably, huh?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah.
Wait,
no,
I did. You're kidding about which part?
You played
exactly
so many pranks since we got on the phone with you.
Downhill part.
Oh, okay. But you did move to Iowa.
I actually did move to Iowa.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Hey, man. I'll have to figure out what part later on.
Yeah.
You know, KC can draw an Iowa tag next year.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
I'm thinking about drawing this year.
Yeah.
If I don't know,
yeah,
I got a pretty good shot.
Talk about that later.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. So when do you get your residency?
It takes a few months, so I'll be good.
Perfect.
You know, come fall time. So
good,
man. That's gonna make me very jealous of you in the future.
That's cool, man. You know.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. This first year, it's definitely gonna be a good test run to figure out. You know, cause I'm starting from ground zero again, essentially.
Well, so. What's sick is that you get to like hunt the whole state when you move there.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what's cool, man.
What's also cool is that, you know, you got a pretty serious other half before you move to Iowa, because if you move to Iowa before you are serious with somebody, you're going to have a hard time finding somebody.
Well, that's the thing. Like besides some family, you know, which obviously wasn't fun, but, yeah, I don't have a whole lot of ties. Self-employed, can be wherever, and figured might as well do it now or I might regret it sometime down the road.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. It's just you and the Amish girls down there. if you don't. You know.
John Deere, I hear there's a 190 behind every big oak tree down there.
I think so. Yep. So you should be set.
There's also a pair of hand-knitted blue jeans.
Right. Hey, I don't mind. I don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all good, man. I'm definitely going to figure out where you live so that I can come hunting close by whenever I draw a tag again.
That's fine.
I got a couple of years. Fine. I'm not far away. So, well, I mean, it depends on point creep, I guess. Who knows what's going to happen there? But
yeah, I don't know. I heard some guys it was taking 5 years now to get into.
Yeah, it took me five. Unit. It took me five in 2019 really? To draw. Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah. So not
like
cool.
Getting up in that 5 and 6 years, just absolutely crazy. But hey, if it keeps the hunting good.
Yeah. Oh absolutely.
So what makes it Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Exactly.
For sure.
It's the last state that's pure, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy. You go, you know, you just cross the border south, and You know, I mean, you can just tell quality changes right away. Same genetics. You know.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
Yep. Yep. That's it is. Well, that's awesome, dude. It's good news. I mean, and I think I don't know what next year looks like for you as far as self-filming and all that, but I know this year you did a good job of it, man. Like, really do admire what you were able to do this year, man. You did some really you had some really great frame jobs on some of these bucks, and you did a great job. You always do a good job telling the story, keeping people involved. I think every time you or on the podcast, I say something about how I enjoy your YouTube channel as much as anybody else's. But you're
appreciate that.
Sure, yeah, it's the truth, man. But you know, I think a lot. We get a lot of questions because we do a similar thing. KC and I are self filming a lot. We like to spend time in the tree together, but you know, if we have two tags, it's kind of not super efficient.
I mean, he knows the same thing. You know, him and Caitlin split up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever y'all were in Kansas, y'all were two different trees.
Yeah, and that's what you kind of got to do sometimes. And so a lot of guys may or may not be trying to build a brand or do something on YouTube, but they may be doing it for themselves, their legacy, for their kids, or whatever it might be. But we get a lot of questions about self-filming, camera gear, and all these other things. So we're going to kind of go through that a little bit. But the first thing I would like to kind of hear from you about is like when you go to a tree and you're going to set up and self film, what does that setup look like typically?
Like as far as like scouting out a perfect tree like camera arm setup?
Yeah,
and
camera arm. Like how are you getting all the camera gear into the tree and then setting it up, and what's advantageous for you? What side of the body? What level, you know, all these different things.
Okay. Yeah. So most of the time I try to do the same exact thing regardless of tree or situation, just to streamline efficient self-filming is all about streamline. So you're doing it over and over and over again, the same exact way. You don't want to try to do something different or, you know, try to figure it out every time. So I run a muddy, I think it's called the muddy hunter arm. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if they make it anymore, but it's like the beefiest arm that Muddy made. And I've gone through a couple of them, a couple cheaper ones and flimsier ones. And I always try to shoot for that, like that high production quality. So this one, you could dang near hang off the end of it and it's not moving. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I just carry that in my backpack. I normally carry my camera on a little carabiner clip and clip it to the front drawstring of my backpack. Actually, a lot of times when I'm filming, like just like the woods or my feet, it's always clipped in with the carabiner clip.
What part of the camera are you clipping that thing to?
I tie a little piece of paracord around the lens.
Yep. Okay.
Like the base of the lens. Or if you have a cage on your camera, tie a piece of paracord or something. I'm sure it's not the best way to do it. There's a bunch of cool, like cotton carrier, different carrier things you can put on your backpack. But that's just another extra step. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyways, I do that and I climb up in a tree with that hooked on to me majority of the time. Doesn't get in the way too much. And, so if I'm hunting, let's say if I'm hunting out of like ladder stands in Michigan, my wooden ladder stands, I'll just climb up carrying my bow and my backpack and everything. Hang my bow up, swing around my backpack, set it on the seat. And the very first thing, I clip in safety harness, but then the very first thing I do is set up my camera arm. And I always put it, if I'm sitting down on a tree stand, I always put it on my right side, nearly as close to my hip as I possibly can. And if you're sitting, your elbow almost can like rest on it like an armchair. So that's what I do. I keep it super tight. And what that does is if I always try to shoot sitting down, if I'm in a ladder stand, so it keeps my entire left side open. Mm-hmm. So the camera arm's on the right side and it's about right at chin level, like the LCD screen. So I can swing all right there. It's like no problem. So when that's all set up, it depends on if I have a second angle or not. Second angles you can get creative with. I don't really have 100% go-to, but I've been trying to rock the 360 GoPro clipped onto something. And I'll just press record on that and let it run and frame it up and later. And that works really good. GoPros are great second angles. I messed around with a second DSLR, like on my bow hook or something. And that's just, if you can do it, it's better if you have a camera guy for doing that. If you're running solo, I find that a super easy GoPro, you just press record once and forget about it, is the better way to go. But yeah, that's pretty much my setup for like a camera arm setup wise. Right on my right hip, if I'm sitting down, camera sits like right in my lap the entire time. So I don't have to like reach for it or anything. And I feel like that has worked best for me. I'm getting kills on film because I always know how the camera is going to react. And I can just turn it on real quick and get it on it. I always see guys like try to stand up and then now the camera's there or the camera's weird or wacky. Actually on my Kansas buck, it was such a twisted up tree. My camera was in a wacky spot and I, bless you. And I,
thank you. Sorry, I took the headphones off and everything.
And I almost didn't get my Kansas buck on film because it kept going out of level.
Oh,
because it was such a crappy tree that I was in.
Do you change that setup for like your hang and hunt saddle style thing? Are you putting the camera in the same spot?
That's what I was going to go through next. So saddle, I still haven't perfected it.
It's tough.
Yeah, I think I could perfect it if I went with a different camera arm. Like a carbon fourth arrow, super light, small. But then I'd probably have to change my camera setup because it'd be too heavy. Mm-hmm. But with my current setup, what I've been doing is putting it actually on my left side of the tree. So kind of like my shooting side. And just kind of making that work. Because I've noticed that I try to shoot sitting down and my optimum shots are like just left of the camera or like straight behind me. Mm-hmm. imagining that deer are going to like come from in front of me and walk past me. So that's worked out pretty decent. And that's what my Kansas buck setup was. And I mean, that worked, but yeah, I still haven't, I need to mess around with that more. I don't feel like that might not be my final setup.
Yeah.
But if I set the camera arm up on the right side of me, then I got to deal with the bridge in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like if your microphone constantly gets hit on the bridge, or if you're kneeling down, yeah. Or if you're kneeling down and you don't want to stand up, like I shoot kneeling down most of the time.
Yeah.
Then the camera's stuck on the right side. Mm-hmm. So like I have to put it on the left side.
Yeah. I think that's how I hunted with it most of the time. I'm still fiddling around the same thing, you know, left side.
Yeah.
That's how the Kansas buck I shot, same thing. But
yeah.
He pushed
it.
It eliminates a shot
for you putting the camera there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, like if he took another step, I would have been shooting my LCD screen off. You know what I mean? Like it was, he came in left or right. Yeah. You know, that's just one of the things you run into with self filming. You're just going to have some problematic situations. But yeah, that is, you're exactly right. It's about swinging that thing around. You know, it's almost like if we could find, you know, for a saddle guy in particular, you're usually not hanging in a giant tree just because they don't work great for it. You know, so
right.
You know, like if you had just a single jointed camera arm, that each of the parts were like 8 inches long or whatever, you know, it might work a little bit better as opposed to, right. You know, you just end up with a little bit too much there sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what, and that's what I'm going to spend some time this summer and really fine tune, probably make some videos on like what I end up doing.
Yeah.
But like for a tree stand, when you're sitting down, that is the best system I found. Mm-hmm. Is the setup I went over, and that's pretty freaking bulletproof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's also. So just make note that Chris is a right hander and we're right handers. So like mm-hmm. if you
yeah, so left hand vice versa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's how we do it too. We tend to put waist level, you know, on the right side as much as we can. And you mentioned that your camera setup might be kind of too heavy for some certain camera arms. Kind of run through what your camera is that you're running.
So I did a Sony A7 III with a battery grip. I mess around a lot with mics. I had a K3M till I broke it. Mm. And then I had a regular like Rode mic mini until I broke it. And then I had the new Sony digital one, and I haven't broke that one yet.
Yeah. I feel like that one could be an easy one to break though.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. I'm surprised you made it.
It's so stiff.
What else? We helped the guy Chris in Kansas, but he helped introduce us to that mic. So we're pretty even.
There
right?
you go.
I was filming in Kansas. I actually had COVID at the time and didn't know it. I was filming one of my hunts or whatever. And I posted like, all this is a thing with Sony cameras, or I guess the A series, but apparently their input jack for the microphone tends to get short out and get disconnected and not work. And so I posted a picture to Instagram on my story or something where it was like a picture of my setup that night. And basically, I was running, I still had like the mic in the hot shoe mount, but I had that going into like a Zoom H1 recorder, like a little pocket recorder. And Chris was like, I did the exact same thing.
Yep.
You messaged me and I was like, okay, well, what are you doing now? Cause I'm, and so we ended up buying one, I think on the way home from that trip.
It's been pretty good.
Yeah,
like
it does.
I like it.
Great
like
audio. It yeah. It does a good job. It's kind of expensive, but probably not as expensive as that other mic you had. What was it?
K3M.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's like $900, I think.
Yeah.
And the other one is like what, $250 or something?
Yeah, it's $250.
Is that right? It is.
Yeah.
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 But the K3M, we got that so we could run a boom and a mic, like a lab mic, because it has two audio ports.
Yeah.
So, but that's under warranty. I just haven't sent it back yet.
Yeah, I got
that's the part of the problem. This is it. You know, when you're in content production. When are you going to have time to send stuff back to get fixed?
Yeah.
I mean, there has been multiple times where, when we were on Western tour, we bought the K3M in Colorado because we broke our other one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've had lens overnighted that I broke on out, you know, on some random farmer. We've sent a lens to a random farmer that someone knew because we needed an address when we were out. It was in Wyoming.
That's funny, dude.
That's cool, man.
So, oh yeah, we've done just about everything.
Okay, so these are setups for fairly professional, you know, people, I guess, but.
Yeah,
and I guess we're mainly talking about you because we're not super professional. the
at least
the
self, on air we are. You know?
Yeah, we try to make everybody believe it, but we're not. No, so there's a lot of people that are obviously thinking right now, like, well, I'm definitely not buying a $900 bike. Okay, like they're looking $900 on a camera is too much. You know,
$900
sometimes. So
self filming package is what they're going for.
Like I'm sure you get the question, and I don't know. You know, if you even think about this at all, if it's worth your time to answer, but like, you know, like do you have any thoughts for people who might be trying to get into it? Just like I said, for that legacy factor or whatever, they just want to have stuff to go back and watch at the end of the year, but they're not looking to buy a Sony A7III or something like that.
Yeah. So I always say like a great, like entry, you know, barrier of entry, how low can it go? Freaking use your iPhone. Mm-hmm. We actually just did a podcast yesterday and we talked about just this like a little bit, but if you have a iPhone 11 or an iPhone 12, you have better quality than like many basic level DSLRs. Mm-hmm. So like if you just want to like mess around and post some videos and stuff, just like flip your phone landscape, find a $50, $40 camera arm on Amazon that you can screw into a tree or clamp onto a tree and just call it a day.
Yeah.
Like there are so, have you guys ever heard of Whistling Diesel?
That name sounds familiar.
I think so.
He's like the newest, like trending redneck on YouTube that has 2 million subscribers now. He just does crazy stuff to like trucks and whatever. But anyways, all he films is on a freaking phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of people are doing that, man.
2 million subscribers.
I follow a gardener out of like Carolina that does like, he's got, you know, 70,000-80,000 subs or whatever, and he films everything on a phone in his yard. It's like, dude, talk about low entry of barrier or barrier of entry, you know? So
yeah. So there's literally like no freaking excuses. Like everyone has a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got a camera with Zoom already in their pocket. Like that's what you start with. Mm-hmm. Get a kill on film, film some stuff. And then if you like it, if you think it's going to happen, then like a handy cam, spend $800, mm-hmm. all internal Zoom, internal audio. There's so many different levels of handy cams.
Yeah.
4K right off the bat, plug and play. That's probably my best advice.
Yeah.
And then from there, like you're probably more in depth in that if you continue to try to up your production that, you know, you start researching and figuring out, and then that's a huge wormhole. But my best advice, that's how I started. Mm-hmm. I used a Samsung stupid phone when I was like 15, 16. And that's how I started filming.
Yeah.
I had this like 10 inch little screw into the tree, clamp on your phone and just point it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
That's all you had.
Yeah. It's cool, man.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. Like I had a guy at church the other day ask me, he was like, man, I need to talk to you after this about like some camera stuff. I'm going to Africa on a mission trip and want to do some interviews over there. And I wanted to be like, dude, your phone, you know what I mean? Like, like I know you want a camera.
Pocket. What's it look like?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you have an iPhone 10, you're better than a lot of cameras out there that you could buy for, you know, several hundred bucks or whatever.
And also, I mean, this doesn't have a lot to do with self-filming, but like people are probably, if you're doing interviews and stuff, a lot more comfortable talking to a phone than when you stick a camera in their face. Because people like,
no doubt.
Yeah. Even the coolest cats, you know, they clam up real hard if they're not used to a camera. You know? Yeah,
for sure,
man.
Yeah.
So
it's just when it comes down to it, it's just freaking excuses. Like people try to make excuses and think they need better equipment before they can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But if they're actually going to do something, if they want to do it and they have the tools, you know, that's all they need.
Yeah.
So,
you know, kind of on that note about people doing it on their own, you know, like we, all grew up watching outdoor TV, So we didn't, nobody had a clue how to tell a story, pretty much is what I'm trying to say, you know? So, you know,
intro, kill shot, done.
Yeah. And, you know, what do you call it? You know, box store rock music, right? So throw that in there. But like, if you want to up your production value, instead of spending money on a, you know, nicer camera or whatever, a lot of it is just making sure you document stuff, right? Do you have like a checklist of like what you try to get done every time you head to the tree as far as, you know, storytelling, or do you just kind of come by naturally?
I mean, I've been self-filming for a long time. Like every single, until like this year, I have filmed every single hunt I've ever been on since I was like 15.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of hunts. So over that time you learn as you edit and you're like, I should have done this, I should have done that, I need to do this next time, blah, blah, blah. So now it's just all kind of second nature. Mm-hmm. But a good thought process to go over it is document what's going on rather than trying to stage stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're driving to your property, just don't do anything different. Just start filming what you're doing. And then you get out of the truck, you just film what you do. When you're walking to the stand, just film you walking to the stand. And then get in the stand, just film you walking, getting into the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're in the stand. Just like, it's not rock. Like, to me, it's not rock science. You literally just document exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And every time you do something different, just film it.
Yeah. Transition shot. You
know,
It's all about, and that's what storytelling is. It's like, you're driving and then all of a sudden you're in the tree. You just missed a giant section of the storytelling,
mm-hmm.
you know? So
what's real cool is when you have a camera guy following you and you still miss that giant section
because he fell asleep.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole nother wormhole in a sense.
Yeah. For sure.
Mitchell never does that, does he?
Mitch is really good.
There you go.
It doesn't take much to get stuff rocking. But yeah, I mean, document versus trying too hard, you know, mm-hmm. when you have the document mindset of just whatever happens, you just film whatever's happening. It's way easier to tackle that mm-hmm. rather than, okay, I gotta like do something different to film it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly what you're trying to do.
We've been having some, you know, newer guys, not newer, like as far as like into the camera world per se, but just guys new to us or whatever, kind of hang out with us some more and follow us around a little bit. And, you know, I come at this from the hunter standpoint. I haven't been filming near as long as Tyler has, but my kind of, I guess, solution to this problem is just film a bunch. Get a big SD card and roll, mm-hmm. you know, because that's how you're going to make sure you get the stuff, you know, like we don't live in the world where you have to develop film anymore. So as long as you got enough gigs on that card, man, you can, you know, you can just format a card, you know,
space
if you got too much crap on there.
Space is free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of always my solution is just, you know, a guy's like, well, I don't, you know, what do you want? It's like, man, just film a bunch today and just, we'll, you know, if you film or aren't filming enough, we'll tell you if you, you know, if we think you can cut back on some stuff, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. But, that's like, to me, like, there is a little bit of an aspect of like having to go through that footage that you definitely don't like. But like in our instance, you know, KC and I have a dynamic and we discuss almost everything we do. And so like where a lone wolf type of guy might just have that internal discussion with himself. We're, you know, playing out all the variables together or whatever. Yeah. So like it does make better footage for us to roll, but like, you know, like
I said,
like
also get 20 minutes of dialogue in a 21 minute section, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For
so
sure.
But the lone wolf guy, you know, needs to make sure that he's like you said, every time something is changing, you get a little clip of it just to show that something's happening, you know, and it doesn't take much really.
Sure.
I mean, I always try to shoot for like 3 to 5 seconds of stable footage in that scene, you know what I mean? Whatever it is. And that's the key is like, when you turn the camera on, when you press the record button, the camera's going to shake a little bit. And when you go to reach for it at the end, it's going to shake a little bit. So you need to like hold still for about 5 seconds, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
and I feel like that a lot of that stuff is trial and error. Like when you start doing it and then you start piecing it together. And that's a big thing too, is all the editing stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people are scared about that, but the majority of people, you know, have some sort of Apple product, Mac, or Windows product, and they all come standard with a very entry-level video editor. And that's how I started, you know, the free editor that comes on a laptop or a phone, and you just start working at it, you know. It's only scary until you figure it out.
Yep, that's right, man.
Well, let's talk about game time, man. I mean, that's the you know, we talk about storytelling and all that kind of stuff, but really the essence of the whole thing is getting the shot on film, right? And it's what we all struggle with, because when you're self-filming, almost never is the film the priority over actually shooting the animal, right? I mean, like, I guess if anything, it becomes the equal when you're really trying to do this thing. But, like, you want to get good footage of the kill. You know, do you have any you know, tips for the, you know, that magic? You know, imagine your Kansas buck from this year. You know, you see you saw him at, like, what, like 200 yards or something like that, and you kind of were getting prepped or whatever. Like, what's that thought process go? How's that go for, you know, getting him on film?
I think it definitely, your success rate stems from how prepared you are on your setup. Like if your setup's perfect, you should be able to get it on film. And if you're prepared, if your bow is ready, your release is ready, you're recording, everything's good. You just follow the deer as much as I can. Like, every now and again, like, you can tell I don't pay attention to the camera to make sure I'm like figuring out what's going on, and then I pick the camera back up. And this is where I think a lot of my archery and shooting experience helps. Because I can shoot in all sorts of different situations, fast, slow, you know, changing ranges. I just have just a little bit more experience with that. So I can wait until like the last dang near second where I'm like, okay, I gotta forget about the camera. You get a position, you put it a little bit ahead of the deer. You just punch out wide and just swing over and get them, is most of the time what I do. And cameras these days with a 4K, you can see it, you know, which is what I did on all of the cell phone stuff I did this year. Yeah, you just wait until the last possible second. You follow the deer in, you stay calm. The worst thing you do is panic. Like, obviously you got buck fever going on. You're now thinking about shooting the deer twice, once with the bow, once with the camera. So you're double duty. So you just got to get your mind clear. And it really is just that 10 seconds. You just got to think clear in those 10 seconds, and every little move is what matters. And that's really what it comes down to. Like, it's strictly a performance thing, and you just gotta be able to do it, in a sense. Like, obviously some things are out of your control and it doesn't work. And, but yeah, luckily, in all of my self-filming, I have never missed a shot on film.
Golly.
And I never shot a deer out of frame.
Shot all my deer out of frame. I'm telling, like I said, I even had camera guys. I was shooting them out of frame on them dudes.
Yeah.
That was not. Yeah.
You
just made me feel real bad about myself.
for people who might not know, explain why 4K, like, why that's a thing.
4K is important because you can crop in a little bit and it can stay HD.
Yeah. So you're talking about the difference between 1080 and 4K
resolution.
I mean, all new iPhones are 4K, all new Handycam, pretty much everything's 4K.
Yeah.
That's new. That's coming out. Mm-hmm. So, that's not too foreign.
Do you, always just, you know, go all the way out to like 24 or whatever on Zoom and just shoot, or is like there a magic number that you're trying to keep it at whenever you know, got an animal close?
It's all situational. I mean, I'm trying to think. I think even sometimes I've been punched in if they're feeding or whatever. It's just so situational.
Yeah.
But the worst thing to do is stay tight, and then he moves a little bit, and then you miss them.
Yeah, I tend to do that pretty bad. Like, I like really good footage, you know. So I take a lot of tight stuff of deer. And
the thing is, though, when you're self filming. And I punch out like that.
Yeah.
Well, now you see a little bit of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a totally different perspective too. You see my tip of my arrow, my bow, draw back. You see the full flight of the arrow. So even though it's not tight on the deer, it gives a different perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool for sure. Yeah. That's one of the things that, like, it's beneficial running like that mirrorless platform or whatever, as opposed to a handy cam camcorder. Like, I run, whenever I'm cell filming, a lot of times, especially this year, whenever our A7III just duked out on us real bad, I ran an AX100, which is, you know, kind of a middle of the road, like camcorder style. And it's slow to zoom in or out, you know, because it's digital, right, pretty much. Whereas, like, if you're running an A7III with a lens on it, like, you know, you can go from 240 to 24 or whatever it is, like, in no time, you know? So it's, it's
kind of a problem. The problem with the lens that I have is, if you're holding your bow in one hand, you got to awkwardly grab the lens with your other hand. And if you have a release in your hand, I tend to clank it all around the camera. So I got to make sure I don't do that. And then if I zoom, then I got to swing back around and grab the, like the gel head handle and then get it back on. So having a Handycam zoom type camcorder and then buying the little zoom accessory you can put on the handle, it would be so much easier. I would love that, but for me, you lose out on a little bit of quality switching over to a camera like that.
I think
it's all hard. No matter what you have, it's all hard.
So there's nothing easy about whatever.
you make it work. You get familiar with whatever you have and you just make it work, you know.
Chris, when I shot my biggest deer ever this year, I did something that I was surprised that you didn't do on your biggest deer ever this year, which was I framed him up, but his horns are cut off in the frame, so you can only see his body.
Dude, we all shot our biggest deer this year. How about that?
Hey, that's good, pretty cool, man. Hey,
cheers.
Yeah,
cheers to that.
That's
man.
Awesome.
Clink, clink. So if you like big bucks. And we talked about how all three of us shot our biggest bucks ever. You can go watch Chris's on YouTube. It's so sick. It just is. I can't tell you anything about it. You got to go watch it. But while you're there, be sure and subscribe to our channel as well, so you can see some of our biggest bucks that we've ever shot as well. I mean, mine from Kansas is on this year,
which
on
is there. So sick.
Dude,
I can't even tell you.
It's pretty sick.
It's like, oh, it's such a good video.
I watch it pretty often. And then, you know, Tyler's giant Illinois bucks on there as well. So there's a lot of good big bucks on YouTube. Check out Chris's. How much did Chris's score? We didn't ever talk about
187
that.
187 or something like that.
High 180s. Just freaking giant. And then, we haven't got to score any of our deer yet because we just think they're giants. So anyways, go check those out on YouTube, guys. We really appreciate it.
For sure. So, like with all this said, like there's obviously a system and like a format that you have kind of, ingrained and that you, whether or not you think about it, like it's something that you do because it's worked for you. How do you keep from getting stale? Like, how do you keep creative and stay creative within all this?
Well, I really enjoy doing it. So I feel like that keeps the drive going a lot. Last year I fought with it a little bit, but this year I definitely fought with it a little bit more, about just tying in, the business side of things with hunting. Because it's just the bad part about it, I guess. I mean, it's all good, but if there is any bad part about it, is that unfortunately shooting deer and filming drives the business aspect of things a little bit. So there's a different pressure behind that, than just, you know, just going out and hunting, you know, relaxing and hunting. So with that being said, that definitely keeps the drive going, trying to achieve a goal, you know, get something on film, knowing that, you know, that's an end goal that I'm going for. And just always mixing it up. Like, I'm always trying to do better. Every video is always trying to do better and learn something from it. And like on the creative aspect side of things, editing is a big creative part. And I really like editing, and now Mitch is editing and he's really, really good, and we'll work together on stuff, you know, hunting videos going forward. So I don't know, for me, it's just a constant growth and learning. You know, I look at old hunting videos and new hunting videos, and at least I think the new ones production wise and creativity wise are a step up from the year prior. And so, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of motivations, because since it is mixed in with business and everything.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. Like that passion to do it that you have is something that I have as well. And like that, it all does mix with like the demand of the quote unquote industry, I guess, right now. You know, it's like you, it would be really awesome if we could all make 2 hour films where we just, our whole season is in 1 2-hour episode, and we show like the changing seasons throughout.
Just call it a day.
Yeah. And just, and like, yeah. And then you make a year salary from doing that. Right. You know, like, but yeah. That just, it's not what happens. You can't do that really, you know? And so like,
yeah,
it's frustrating a little bit, because it does suck your creativity a little bit, but, just having that passion is something that definitely, because you'll think about it throughout the day. It's something you enjoy doing. You're going to think about it throughout the day, and really, you know, creative things come from deep thought. They don't usually come from just scrolling your phone mindlessly, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, I don't know. It's been super interesting, especially for me, just past couple of years, how everything's gone and kind of, I don't know, this year was super awesome and super bad at the same time, you know, like I think it was for everyone, just everything that happened, and it kind of changed perspectives and changed ways people think about things and how gentle life is and what really matters and what really doesn't. And shooting a big deer definitely doesn't matter. Makes us feel good for sure.
Yep.
But in the end, you know, it really doesn't matter.
Sure.
So as long as you always go down to, you know, the foundation and the roots, and we're getting deep here. Like we're trying to talk about like getting people into filming, and this is getting a little deep, but
that's good. Dude.
I think a lot of people try, they look at, you know, people, whatever, that are working. I hate the word like outdoor industry and influencers or whatever. I don't believe in any of that, but that's just the way it is. But people want to get to that point, and they think they have to do something to get to that point, but it's not going to work unless you're passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And there's something that clicks and connect. You can't buy your way in to doing it. You just can't force it. And there are some people in the industry that are really trying to force it right now.
Yeah.
I'm super, super interested on how that's all going to play out down the road.
Yeah.
And you know, sure, there's some passion, but there's definitely a lot of force. And I don't know, if there's passion behind it, you're passionate about making videos and hunting and doing things for the right reason, you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't work.
Right. Yeah.
So, and especially with the barrier of entry so low with YouTube, I mean, if you just alone, if you make YouTube videos and get a huge following, like you can, without sponsors, without nothing, you can make a full-time job out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the industry is going to start to go, is creators, content creators, YouTubers or whatever, aren't going to be dependent on outside sources. They're going to be able to be a sole standing, you know, individual, being able to do it full time,
sure,
making content, sharing hunting, sharing outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Absolutely. That's, definitely something we have been, you know, discussing, and it's something that, nobody really knows exactly what's going to happen in the next few years, but, we definitely have our thoughts about what might and might not happen. And, I think with that, you know, it does free you up to try new things, you know, and try to get creative and to try to, you know, be the first one to make the wave, you know, or whatever. So,
right. Yeah. This generation, Gen Z, is going to be super interesting.
Yeah.
Don't know what color their hair is going to be one day from the next. And then boom, they're a YouTube star.
That's it, man. That's it.
Who knows?
Well, man, I appreciate your thoughts about, you know, all of this, but, also the thoughts about what matters, man, that struck a chord for sure. I think about that a lot, you know, and what truly matters. And you and I and KC all share a very, I guess, fiery passion for what we do, man, and just being in the outdoors. And I know, like, it means so much to me spiritually, and among other things, that have to do with my health or just my enjoyment and that kind of thing. But like, you know, in the end, I think we all kind of have a similar idea about what matters. And I appreciate mm-hmm. that. I appreciate your honesty, man. I appreciate your friendship and just your ability to hop on the phone with us anytime and to never, pretty much never say no to us, man. And,
yeah.
And I know I'm really excited.
It's just a phone call. This isn't a podcast. This is just a phone call to me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's right, man.
That's what's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's been something that since pretty much day one, since I've known you, man, it's always been that way, man. So I do appreciate it, man. And, appreciate your time, 'cause I know you're busy and things have gone well for you the last couple of years. So I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited to see where it goes next year, man, especially with you changing locations, moving to the heartland. And, anyway, I think, for people who are interested that want to see Chris's stuff, who haven't seen it, been living under a rock, just, type in Chris B on YouTube. Is there anywhere else we need to send them, man?
Yeah, YouTube and Instagram is pretty much where I, post most of my stuff.
Yep. Cool, man. We will, link to all that in the notes, along with some of the links to some of the gear that Chris uses when he's self-filming, if you're interested in upping your game. So anyway, we appreciate it, man.
Guys.
Yeah. We'll be talking to you. Chris does a great job with that, man. And consequently, his YouTube is a very cool place to be. Ours is too. You should go check it out if you're from, Chris's audience, or if you're just here as a new person. Check it out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'd really appreciate that. Subscribe here as well on the podcast. Casey, we got to try out a new saddle today. What'd you think?
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
There were some things about it that was a little bit different. That were a little bit different. I'm starting to talk like an East Texaner for sure, because it's getting late. But overall, we tried the Cruiser XC out today, mm-hmm. I think, which sounds more like a remote control car to mm-hmm. me than it does anything else. But it's cool. It's got a lot of room. Kind of pretty intuitive for a guy who's trying to, you know, hang and hunt. So
built like a hammock.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Banana hammock.
You know. You know, we looked at it compared to the Tethered, which is what we use all year, you know, and it's definitely quite a bit bigger. And we were talking just a second ago, kind of off air, about some people that have shocked us that we're not as big as we thought they
that's
were.
Right. I think that's the real reason why they turned ATA digital this year. People just got embarrassed about being smaller in person than what they are.
All these, you know, famous hunters wanted people to not know how they make deer look big, and that's because they're tiny.
What's the hashtag y'all were coming up with? Like, big dudes kill big deer, and it makes them look smaller or something like that?
Big
I'm the smallest
big
guy
small.
That we run around with. Well, no, not now, but...
HTH.
HTH and Chris are both, you know...
Different. Chris is like 6 foot. He's just built like a...
He's
like an
framed, yeah. And then Eric's about my size. You know, you got the Bams of the world that are 6'4", and then John McWilliams 6'6", you know, like all these huge people.
Sean O'Brien.
O'Brien, Obese.
He's like, what, 6'2", like
2,000. Ado's like 6'1", you know, like big dudes, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kill 160s whenever you're that big. They just don't look as big.
Well, that's the thing, man. It's like there's people making that have made brands killing 130-inch deer, and it's like, that's a great deer. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I'm going to shoot hopefully a couple
I shot a few under 130 this year, okay, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So, but I'm just saying, you know, they're making them deer look about 160 because they got not a whole lot of lead in their britches.
So Chris isn't super tall. He's probably like 5'9", something like that.
Chris Webb?
Chris B.
Oh.
Yeah.
So too many Chris's,
but I think it was on that Big Buck video, he was talking about, he's like, I've got big hands. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Sorry, man. We didn't, you know, we weren't questioning your masculinity, Chris. It's okay. You know, dude's been growing a beard since he's 12. So.
Dude, me too, Chris. If you're listening, Chris, me and you in the both in the same boat about beards, man. We got dark hair. We can't grow a beard. Isn't that just weird?
Yeah. That's what happens.
It's, I think it's Indian blood. That's what
it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, since you can be, I was thinking about this in the shower the other day, since you can be whatever you want these days,
mm-hmm.
could I not just be can I not just sign my kids up to be American Indians and get College Free and stuff like that?
Elizabeth Warren did it.
Is that what she did?
Yeah, pretty much. Not herself. You know.
Oh, she did it herself.
Yeah. She always claimed the native heritage, and then ends up somebody did her genetics, and she's 1,024th Native American.
You know what? She looks like it. She's about as white as they come.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you weren't fooling nobody. Come on now.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you're fooling some people because people are very foolable right now. Mm. But this isn't a political podcast. So we won't go into an elaboration of what that means.
That's right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking about. You know, you can, soon enough, we want to marry an oak tree.
I'm going to probably just, re-identify as a Iowa resident. I think that's a great idea.
I'm probably going to re-identify as a popular hunter. I think is what I'm going to do.
Are you?
I think I'm going to do that. Yep.
Be a punter.
That's right. I should have been, man.
Yeah.
I should have been a deep snapper, which I was like third team deep snapper in college.
Yeah.
But daggum it, dude. Some of them deep snappers just be making money to go out there about four plays a game.
But it's a high-pressure situation.
It definitely is. Because
at least when you're a kicker, everybody wants to give you a high five and you do a good job. But deep snappers are the ones giving the high fives.
Yeah. When the deep snapper does a good job, they go, oh.
You exist? No, you don't. Yeah.
They just go, oh, the play happened, whatever it was supposed to do. Yeah. It's like. Do people really say, oh, that center snapped it so well?
That's right.
And he put it right in the quarterback's hands.
Yep. Anyways, guys, we've got a new YouTube video out, of course. We try to get like two or three out this week. There is a
new tube. Since you got me.
This one was an unboxing of the Cruiser saddle. It's pretty sweet. Tyler did a good job on it.
Thanks,
and
man.
I've only watched the first part of it, so maybe you didn't, but the first part was cool.
I complained all day about it terribly. I did, actually.
No, it was awesome. So go check that out. if you are naked right now and you need clothing, you should go check out the Element shop at theelementwild.com and buy some clothes. We have a new Element t-shirt out. It's kind of like a periodic table theme thing, you know, because we're the element, you know, elements, that kind of thing. Right. If you didn't get it.
We're living in our elements.
Yeah, we're living in it. So go check that out. It's in everybody's favorite colors, which are olive and tan. That's what the world revolves around, olive and tan shirts these days. So go.
Is OD olive drab or original drab or the original, what is it?
I thought I knew what that was, but I'm blanking right now.
Olive drab green? Original dark green?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we've got OD green.
OD green, for sure. Yeah. So, we'd really appreciate that. It helps out a ton. We will get that shipped out to you ASAP. So, anyways, thank y'all for listening. It means a ton as well. If you're new to us, we really appreciate that. Chris is a good dude, and we're glad to have him on the podcast. It is shed season. We aren't going to find a lot of sheds, at least until mid-March, because they don't really exist in East Texas unless you're just... You know, one is just gifted to you.
Well, but, when green up happens, you know, they're not quite moving as much because they got plenty to eat.
And yeah.
They're hard to find.
They are. Yeah. So we have about 3 days a year where deer have shed their antlers before green up. So it probably ain't going to happen. But we have got some stuff in the works. We got a lot of turkey hunting coming up. So pretty excited about it. Hope y'all are excited about the spring as well. It's going to be a bad to the bone year, y'all. Here in Texas, we just lifted the mask ban. So I don't know what that means for you, but I'm pretty excited. Because I don't really see people anyway, so I'm tired of wearing that mask. I hope you're stoked to get out and chase some sheds. If you find some really good barns, sheds, lean-tos, anything, post them on Facebook. We'd love to see them. Tag us in it. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.